6. The goggles inside my new Armada VR helmet provided me with an immersive 360-degree view from inside my drone's simulated cockpit. Looking out through its wraparound canopy, I could see the Doolittle's drone launch hangar. I glanced left and then right, taking in the row of identical interceptors lined up on either side of me, gleaming under the hangar dome's floodlights, ready for launch. My heads-up display appeared, superimposed over my wraparound view out of the cockpit, providing readouts of my starship's flight, weapon, and communication systems, along with radar, sensor, and navigation data. I cleared my throat and addressed TAC, my ship's tactical avionics computer. TAC served as a virtual co-pilot, managing my ship's navigation, weapons, and communication systems, and providing me with verbal status updates. TAC could also give novice pilots helpful on-the-fly recommendations on how to improve their maneuvering techniques and weapon usage, but I'd disabled that feature long ago. TAC, prepare all systems for launch, I said.
Compliance!
TAC chirped brightly. At the default setting, the computer spoke in a perpetually calm, synthesized female voice that I found unnerving in the heat of battle, so I'd installed several other custom sound profiles, including one called Trimaxian, which gave it the voice of the ship's computer in Flight of the Navigator. It made my ship's voice sound like Pee-wee Herman yelling through a vocoder, but this amused me and kept me on my toes. Each interceptor's thrusters, weapons, and shields were powered by a fusion reactor that constantly recharged its drone's power cells, but it did so at a very slow rate, so you needed to use your power sparingly during battle, otherwise you'd end up floating through space, a sitting duck with a dead stick. It was easy to run out of juice during the heat of combat, because every time you moved or fired your weapons, it used up some of your power, and whenever your shields took a direct hit, that drained your power cells too. When they started to get too low, your drone would lose its shields first, then its weapons, and finally its thrusters. Then your drone would crash and burn, or if you were lucky enough to be fighting in space, it would just begin to drift helplessly through the void while you waited for the power cells to recharge enough for your thrusters to come back online, praying that an enemy ship didn't pick you off first, which it almost always did. The enemy Glaive fighters had blaster turrets mounted on each of their wingtips that could rotate in any direction, giving them an almost unlimited field of fire. But my interceptor's plasma cannons, aka sun guns and Macross missiles, were both forward-firing weapons, so my target needed to be in front of me if I was going to be able to hit it. My ship had a laser turret, however, that was able to fire in any direction, but unlike my sun guns, the turret used up a lot of power and had to be used sparingly. Our ships were also each equipped with a self-destruct mechanism, which also served as a weapon of last resort. As long as your drone had even a tiny bit of power remaining, you could detonate its reactor core in an explosion that could vaporize everything within a tenth of a kilometer. If you timed it right, you could take out nearly a dozen enemy ships at once with this tactic. Unfortunately, the enemy also had the ability to detonate their power cores, and they didn't care about taking out friendlies when they did it. A lot of players didn't either, of course. For some, it was their only real strategy. The only major downside to pulling this self-destruct move was that it meant you would miss at least part of the battle, because before you could fly back out to rejoin the fight, you had to wait to take control of another drone back inside the hangar, and then wait for it to reach the front of the launch queue, all of which could take up to a minute or more, depending on how fast the enemy was dropping our drones. A klaxon began to sound as the hangar's belt-fed launch rack whirred into action and began to deploy the interceptors slotted ahead of mine, one after the other, firing them out of the belly of the Doolittle like bullets from a machine gun. "Huzzah!" I heard Delio say. "Now I finally get to kill some aliens!" "Not if you get waxed before you fire a single shot," Cruz said, like last time. "I told you my internet connection went out!" Delio shouted. "Dude, we heard you cursing on the comm after you got killed," I reminded him. "That proves nothing," he said cheerfully. Then he shouted, "Cry havoc!" When neither of us followed suit, he cleared his throat loudly over the comm. "Why didn't either of you cry havoc with me just now?" he asked. "You bitches best be crying me some havoc. You want to jinx us?" "Sorry, Delio," I said. Then, as loud as I could, I shouted, "Cry havoc!" "I'll leave the crying to you guys," Cruz said, before muttering his own personal pre-throwdown mantra to himself. Let's do this. I cracked my knuckles, then pressed play on the best ass-kicking track on my father's old Raid the Arcade mix. As the opening bass line of Queen's Another One Bites the Dust began to thud over my helmet's built-in headphones, I felt myself begin to slip into the zone. The song's machine gun beat was a perfect match for the timing and rhythm of the enemy's ships in nearly every kind of mission. We Will Rock You worked really well for me during shooting gallery scenarios like this one, too. When Freddie Mercury's vocals kicked in a few seconds later, I cranked up the volume in my headset, apparently loud enough for my microphone to pick it up.
Oh, great, Cruz said. Sounds like DJ Geriatric is spinning again tonight. What a surprise.
If it's too loud, you're too old, Quoth, I shot back. Why don't you mute me and put on the latest Kids Bop compilation instead?
Perhaps I will, he replied. They're unappreciated musical geniuses, you know.
The two drones Cruz and Deal were controlling launched out of the hangar just ahead of me, each labeled with their call sign on my HUD.
Attention! Your drone is next in the launch queue,
my computer announced with far too much enthusiasm.
Prepare to engage the enemy!
The belt cycled forward again, feeding my drone into the launch tunnel and then blasting it out in space. And then it was on like red dawn. The first wave of responding enemy ships was already pouring out of the bottom of the nearest dreadnought sphere, like hornets from a metal hive, and streaking down on us out of the blackness, approaching fast along our 12 o'clock. A split second later, the space in front of my drone was filled with hundreds of Sobra Kai Glaive fighters, along with dozens of dragon-like wyverns uncoiling and snaking through their swarming ranks, all of them moving in unison as they moved to attack the icebreaker. I held my breath as I targeted one of the lead glaives. I felt like I had a grudge to settle with the damn thing, for escaping from my fantasy life to invade my reality, and for making me question my own sanity in the process. My three-dimensional tactical display flashed, warning me of a reactor detonation directly behind me, and I accelerated just in time to escape being caught in the blast. Lasting longer than a few minutes in a battle of this size wasn't easy. Evading enemy fire required lightning-fast reflexes, wicked spatial awareness, and a gift for pattern recognition. You had to learn how to find the best route to cut through the enemy's ranks, retreating and attacking simultaneously. Once I'd spent enough hours studying how the Sobra Kai ships moved and attacked as a group, I gradually began to see the patterns hidden in all that chaos. Sometimes they moved like a flock of birds, chasing its own tail as it circled for a landing. Other times, they made sharp turns in the sky, like a school of predatory fish, but there was always a pattern to it, and recognizing it allowed me to anticipate the enemy's movements and reactions, and that made it relatively easy for me to get them in my sights, as long as I was listening to the right music. Music was key. The old rock songs on my father's old mixtapes were perfect because they had a steady, hard-driving beat that served as my mental combat metronome. I cut my engines and fired my retro thrusters, swinging my ship around 180 degrees without altering or slowing my forward momentum. Then I opened fire on the swarm of glaives converging on the icebreaker's tail with a series of bursts from my sun guns. When I hit my first target, it imploded into collapsing fireballs of superheated plasma in front of me, and a message flashed on my HUD informing me I'd made the first kill of the engagement. One down, a few million to go, I announced over the comm, already buzzing with adrenaline. Killing video game aliens had always been an outlet for my adolescent frustrations, but tonight it felt as though I was venting compressed rage each time I pulled the trigger. It didn't matter that the Sobra Kai were fictional. I still wanted to kill every last one of them. Guys, I've got two glaives on my tail, Deal announced. Any help? Help yourself, pal, I heard Cruz say. We're all getting our asses handed to us. Not me, I replied. I am officially in the zone. I scanned my scopes, but neither Quoth nor Delio was currently visible because the icebreaker was now directly between us. I fired my lateral thrusters and did a series of diving barrel rolls to evade the incoming barrage of plasma bolts streaking past me on all sides. I also teased the throttle to vary my ship's speed and angle of ascent while I lined up my omnidirectional laser turret's targeting reticle with a new threat. A train of three glaives I'd just picked up on my tail, looming on my HUD's aft display. The moment I got a targeting lock on the leader, I thumbed the laser turret's trigger. The beam only lasted for a split second, and it wasn't visible with the naked eye, but its exact trajectory appeared on my HUD. I watched as it burned through the hull of the glaive closest to my tail, then continued burning on through the other two glaives directly behind that one, destroying them in a rapid chain of explosions. Boom! Boom! Ba-boom! I powered down my already overheating laser, then switched back to my plasma cannons, which automatically reoriented my HUD so that it showed what was in front of my ship instead of the dissipating fireball in its wake. Then I threw the throttle wide open. But as I passed under the icebreaker and prepared to swing up on its opposite side, two more glaives reappeared on my tail. They dropped in directly behind me, and I started to take heavy fire, knocking my shields down by half and putting even more of a drain on my power cells, which were already dangerously low. According to my HUD, the icebreaker had been firing its melt laser for less than a minute, and the Sobrakai had already destroyed nearly half of our interceptors. Reinforcements were still pouring out of the Doolittle's hangar, but these drones were all piloted by players who had already gotten themselves killed once, and most of them would be destroyed a second time within seconds of rejoining the battle. Cruz was right. We weren't going to be able to hold them off long enough. "Screw this," I said. "I'm going to try and create a diversion." "Where are you going?" Cruz said over the comm. "Protect the icebreaker, dumbass!" "Sorry, Cruz," I said, pushing my throttle forward. "But you'll never guess who just showed up." "Leroy!" "Oh, Lightman, don't you even dare!" "Jenkins!" I broke formation with the others, leaving the icebreaker behind as I moved to attack the nearest dreadnought. I slammed my throttle forward and crossed in front of it, strafing the turrets spaced along the sphere's equator, taking out one or two of them. "God damn it, Zach!" Cruz shouted. "Every time! Every goddamn time!" I grinned and fired my thrusters, putting my fighter into an instantaneous vertical dive with the intention of slipping under the sphere to strafe its shield. This maneuver cost me nearly a third of my remaining power because my interceptor had to momentarily activate its inertia cancellation field to execute it. But I shook several of the Sobrakai fighters off my tail because they needed to execute the same move to stay on me, and most of them didn't have enough power. Instead, they had to fishhook around behind me and then try to get a bead on my interceptor again when I was already gone. Another swarm of glaives emerged from the nearby dreadnought, all diving at the icebreaker in a straight line, firing in tandem. I shredded them with a single sustained burst from my sun guns, bringing my Sobrakai kill count up to 9. Not bad, but also not up to my usual standards. My aim was a bit off. "Shit!" I heard Deal shout over the comm. "I just lost my Goram shields because I'm already out of frackin' power!" "Dude," Cruz said, "you shouldn't mix swears from different universes." "Says who?" Deal shot back. "Besides, what if BSG and Firefly took place in the same universe? You ever consider that?" I heard a thunderous series of explosions behind me and swung my head around just in time to see the IDC Doolittle erupt into a huge fireball amid a hail of enemy plasma fire. "What did I tell you?" Cruz muttered into his headset. "There goes the carrier and the rest of our drone reserves." "Yeah, and that goddamn icebreaker still isn't finished making a stupid ice fishing hole either," Deal added. "Game over, man! Game the fuck over!" "Not yet," I muttered. Clenching my teeth, I swung my interceptor back around and returned to try to help defend the icebreaker, targeting the cluster of glaives attacking its aft thrusters, but I couldn't get a lock on any of the targets flashing on my HUD because I kept having to dodge incoming enemy fire as well as friendly fire from the sentry guns on the icebreaker's armored skin as my drone skimmed over it. My drone took 2 more direct hits, knocking my shields down to 15%. One more hit and they would fail, and my weapons would follow soon after. Not good. I jammed my flight stick forward, cutting into a sharp dive to avoid flying right into the beam of the icebreaker's pulsing melt laser. Ignoring TAC's warnings about my drone's imminent power failure, I gunned the throttle and continued turning into a barrel roll, both sun guns still blazing. "Shit!" I heard Deal curse. "They got me, guys. I'm out." I glanced at my HUD, just in time to see Deal's interceptor vanish off my scopes. "Me too," Cruz added a second later. He unleashed a colorful stream of profanity on his comm and logged out of the game completely. The digital deaths of my two best friends distracted me just long enough to take another series of direct hits, causing my shields and weapons to fail. I immediately initiated the self-destruct sequence on my drone's power core, even though I knew it was unlikely I would last the 7 seconds required for it to complete. All of the Glaive fighters in the vicinity began to redirect their fire at me, hoping to destroy my core before it could complete its countdown and go critical. But, in doing so, they were momentarily forced to take their focus off the icebreaker, just as I'd hoped. 5 seconds remaining on my drone self-destruct sequence. Then 4, 3, but that was when the inevitable happened. The icebreaker finally took one hit too many and exploded directly beneath me. The ensuing fireball destroyed my drone, along with every ship within its blast radius. Ominous music began to play in my headphones as the words, "Mission Failed," appeared, superimposed over my now disembodied view of the Sobrakai Armada as each of the 6 dreadnought spheres began to recall their remaining drones and return to their original formation in orbit, with this minor threat to their world now vanquished. I blindly powered off my game console and sat in the darkness for a moment before pulling off my VR helmet and returning to the real world with a sigh. My phone rang a few seconds later. Cruz was on the line. He had already checked and wanted to let me know that attack on Sobrakai wasn't on the list of replayable missions, at least not yet. Then he conferenced Deal in for his traditional post-mission bitch fest. After, the Mikes tried to cajole me into joining them on a Terra Firma mission, but I mumbled something about having homework and said I'd see them at school tomorrow. Then I got up and went over to my closet. When I opened the door, a small avalanche of stuff spilled out onto my feet. I rummaged through the dense forest of dress shirts and winter coats on plastic hangers until I found my father's old jacket way at the back. It was an old black baseball jacket with leather sleeves, and it was completely covered front and back with embroidered patches, all somehow science fiction or video game related, including several high score award patches for old Activision games like Star Master, Dreadnought Destroyer, Laser Blast, and Kaboom. Running down both sleeves were logos and military insignia from the Rebel Alliance, the Star League, the United Federation of Planets, the Colonial Fleet from BSG, and the Robotech Defense Force, among others. I studied each one in turn, running my fingertips over the embroidery. When I'd last tried this jacket on a few years ago, it had still been too big on me. But when I slipped it on now, it fit me perfectly, almost as if it had been tailor-made. I found myself itching to wear it to school tomorrow, despite my earlier vow to stop living in the past and obsessing over the father I had never known. I looked around at the posters, toys, and models that filled my room, and felt a pang in my chest at the thought of moving all my dad's prized possessions up into the attic. Despite my good intentions, it seemed I wasn't quite ready to let go of my father. Not yet. I leaned back in my chair, stifling a yawn that did not wish to be stifled. I did a quick systems-wide status check, the results of which confirmed that my wagon was Dragon, plutonium chamber empty, sleep required immediately. I took 3 steps toward my bed and collapsed face first onto my vintage Star Wars bedsheets, where I immediately fell into a fitful sleep. My dreams that night were plagued by visions of a giant Sobrakai overlord constricting its enormous tentacles around a defenseless planet Earth, as if preparing to swallow it whole.